Jim Elliott and four other missionaries were seeking to reach out to a fierce Ecuadorian tribe known as the Alcas when those same Indians turned on them. But Jim's widow, Elizabeth, surprised many when she and her young daughter, Valerie, lived there with the same tribe for 2 years, helping them learn about the love and forgiveness found in Jesus Christ. On Gateway to Joy, Elizabeth Elliott shares with you the lessons learned through that and many other events in her remarkable journey.
Now, the establishment of verbal authority in a normal, quiet tone, and I don't remember either of my parents ever raising their voices. And I have told Valerie that in all the times I've been in their home, my daughter is the mother of 8 children, I have never heard her raise her voice. And she said to me, "Oh, Mama, but I do sometimes." She said, "You got to pray for me because I don't want to, but I do." Well, I said, "All I can say is I've never seen it and I've never heard it in all the times I've been there." She does speak in a calm and quiet voice, and she does these things that I'm trying to tell you. She's not perfect by any means, but the example of control is extremely important. A spanking is a measure of pain administered by a parent who is in control of himself. Hitting a child becomes abuse. If you get upset because the child has disobeyed you when you've screamed at him 5 times, you're out of control and you're going to abuse him, very likely. You might be tempted to slap him in the face or hit him on the hand or do something, but his little switch on those little bare legs is not going to do any damage, but it certainly does get the message across. Nothing is as important as example. Nothing you say, nothing you do will be as important as what you are. You have to set the example of neatness if you want your children to be neat. You have to set the example of quietness in your attitude, in your spirit, your gentleness, if you want your children to be quiet and gentle. Now, our home was a peaceful home. Is it possible to have a peaceful home when you have 6 children? Yes, it is. But it has to come from the authorities. And my father absolutely insisted that we have a peaceful, leisurely breakfast. There was no tearing around trying to find brown bags and school lunches and books, because all of that had to be done the night before. And we had to be at breakfast at a certain time so that we could eat in a leisurely fashion and then have family prayers. And then my father had to get to the commuter train, and there was absolutely no flexibility in the commuter train. So all of these things had to be done in a peaceful and orderly way. We were taught to be quiet, because very often, almost always, there was somebody asleep. A baby was asleep, or my mother was having a nap in the afternoon. My mother always lay down for half an hour or so in the afternoon. We were taught not to thunder up and down the stairs, not to slam doors, and if we slammed doors, we were asked to go back out and come in properly and shut the door quietly. And we hated that nuisance, especially in the summertime. You know, the kids are outside calling and you race out the front door and that screen door slammed and we would be called back in, invariably. Quiet is the absence of noise. Stillness is the absence of movement. We were taught both. We had to be quiet at prayers and we had to be still. This young couple asked me if they could take me to dinner because they wanted some help in raising their, I guess he was about 18 months old, their child. So I was glad to do so, and I was to meet them at a restaurant, and my heart sank when they arrived with the child. I was very much hoping that they would leave him at home, because in my experience, there are very few young couples with a child that age who have any idea how to keep the child quiet, and so adult conversation is impossible. And my heart sank a little bit further when I heard the wife say to the husband, "Oh, don't tell me they don't have one of those high chairs with a tray." The high chairs were the kind that sit at the table. She said, "He's going to be all over the table." And, of course, she was right. They put the child at the head of the table, and they put me at his left, and they had his mother at the right, and the father was down there, and somebody else was down there. Well, how long do you think it took that little boy to reach for his mother's fork to play with? So he reached for her fork, and she took it out of his hand physically and put it down, and she was talking to the people at the other end of the table, paying no attention to the child. She never said a word. She did not say no. Well, So she puts the fork down, and again he reaches for the fork, and again she takes it out of his hand. I've lost count of how many times this happened. So then he reaches across the plate, and he gets her knife, and she takes the knife out of his hand. And then he reaches for the spoon. She takes the spoon out of his hand. Then he reached for her glass of water, and of course by this time she'd called the waitress and said, could you bring a glass of milk and some crackers to keep this child quiet? So the glass of milk and the crackers finally run out of their power over this child. And it was the same thing. There was absolutely no way that I could keep my mind on what was going on with their questions, because the father was oblivious to what was going on at this end, and the mother was almost as oblivious, because this was all automatic, just taking the stuff out of his hand. Physically, she had never established what? Verbal authority. Well, when the child got too tired of all that, he reached for my spoon. Now, this child had never seen me before. And all I did was just stoop down a little bit so that my eyes were on a level with his, and I looked him straight in the eye, and I said, Jeremy, no. And he went, which shows that the child recognized a voice of authority in a person he'd never laid eyes on, and he also knew full well that these people on this side of the table did not have any authority. And throughout that meal, he never touched anything on my side of the table again until after dessert, at which point, when there was quite an animated conversation going on, he thought, well, I'll try it one more time. And so his hand just began to move very cautiously toward my spoon. This time, all I did was look at him, and he turned away. What does that tell you? That child is smart. That child knows exactly what's going on. That child knows that he can get away with almost anything with his parents, and he can just keep them busy. And it's going to be a full-time job, and we see this everywhere we go, not only in the airports where people are at their worst. Is there anything more trying to all of us than traveling? And when the plane is canceled or it's overbooked, and you know, my heart goes out to these young parents with their little children. They don't know what to do. They cannot control them. And they are harried and exhausted and frantic and angry. And I just would love to go up to them and say, there is another way. You don't have to go through this. You don't have to hate your children. And then I see a young mother with a baby in her arms, dragging a screaming two-year-old. She's got three or four handbags, you know, hanging over her shoulders. Poor woman running through the airport, trying to get to a plane. And this two-year-old screaming his head off, and she turns to him and just screams back, do you see that trash can over there? If you don't shut up, I'm going to stuff you in there. And the child knows she's lying. He doesn't stop screaming. It doesn't have any effect whatsoever. Authority and example and peace. And there can be peace in your home. Another thing that was very important in our bringing up was hospitality. Now, how can a mother that has six children entertain other people? It can be done as long as your pride doesn't dictate the way you have to do it. I was reared in the Great Depression. My father made a very, very small salary, I think somewhere between $2,000 and $3,000 a year at that time, and we ate a lot of macaroni and cheese. I don't think I ever even heard the word steak. I didn't know what a steak was till I was in college. So it was very simple meals. And my father had a way of calling up about 4 o'clock in the afternoon and telling my mother that he was bringing a guest home for dinner and perhaps to stay the night. We were greatly blessed by all those guests because usually they were missionaries. And we grew up hearing missionary stories firsthand at our dinner table and our breakfast table. And there were many great Christians who were models to us children. One of them was Betty Scott Stamm. She was Betty Scott, who was on her way to China to marry her fiancé, John Stamm. And it was when I was about 4 years old that she visited in our home. It was when I was 8 years old that we got the news that she had been beheaded by Chinese communists. You can imagine the impression that that made on an 8 year old. I began then to realize that there is a cost to serving Christ. And when I was 12 years old, I found her prayer that she had written, which I copied into my Bible. Lord, I give up all my own plans and purposes, all my own desires and hopes, and accept thy will for my life. I give myself, my life, my all, utterly to thee, to be thine forever. Fill me and seal me with thy Holy Spirit. Use me as thou wilt. Send me where thou wilt, and work out thy whole will in my life, at any cost, now and forever. Don't underestimate the spiritual discernment of your children. I copied that prayer when I was 12 years old. I was not turned off by what had happened to Betty Scott Stamm. I was drawn to the message of the cross. Hospitality was the key to that. Just the fact that our parents made available to us these people of God. And my mother couldn't do anything except maybe add a little water to the soup or a few more macaroni to the casserole or whatever. And we somehow always managed to have a guest room. She didn't move us out of our rooms, but we had a guest room. And the Bible commands us to be hospitable. A home is a microcosm of heaven. It should be a place of peace, a place of refuge, and a place where God is honored and he's glorified. So may God give you grace as you seek to shape a truly Christian family. There is no more powerful message to the world than a Christian home. God bless you.
As Elizabeth has said, anything if offered to God can and will become your gateway to joy. Elizabeth Elliott has been sharing timeless truth with ladies for many years, drawing insight from her Bible study and her experiences as a wife, mother, and missionary. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network, Charlotte, North Carolina.